Hi, Year 11. Mrs. Dewhurst here with this week's podcast on Judaism, beliefs and teachings. Okay, so four down, just two to go. So really important as you're listening to this podcast, if you hear anything that you think, oh, I'm not sure about that, I can't remember that, go back to your revision guide once this podcast is finished. That's part of the point of this, is just helping you to identify maybe where those weak areas are. Okay, so 9.1. Obviously, a big part of Judaism beliefs is being able to explore the nature of God. So this goes from 9.1 to 9.3. So looking at God as one, God as creator, God as lawgiver and judge, and your favourite key term ever, the Shekinah, the divine presence. So God is one. This is the foundation of Judaism. Like Christianity and Islam, it is a monotheistic religion. And God is one is expressed in the Shema. So the Shema is a really important Jewish prayer that is formed from the passages in Deuteronomy. So hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. But what does God as one mean? Okay, this could easily be a two mark or even a four. Explain. So God is the source of all Jewish morality. God is the only being who should be praised and worshipped. God is a single, whole, indivisible being, and everything in the universe has been created and is sustained by this one God. Okay, moving on to the nature of God, God as creator. Okay, remember that the Jewish Bible is called the Tanakh, okay, 24 books. Remember Tanakh? The T for Torah, N for Nevim, K for Ketuvim. And the Torah are the first five books of this, the five books of Moses. Genesis, the first of this, tells how God, as we know, took 6 days to create the universe and everything in it. Now, you need to have two contrasting beliefs about creation in Judaism. That word contrasting, different. So many Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Jews believe the events in Genesis literally happened about 6,000 years ago. So they, because of this, reject scientific theories of evolution. So that's one view. Another, other Jews, including Reformed Jews, interpret the Genesis creation story less literally. They don't take it as it is written. They still believe, though, that God is the creator of everything, but they accept that the universe is much older and life has evolved over many years. Okay, Jews believe that in addition to creating the universe, God also sustains it. He provides all the resources needed for life on earth to survive. So how does evil and free will come in? Well, in order for God to have the power and ability to create everything in the universe, Jews believe that God must be omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. So the belief that God created everything also means that he must have created evil. And the existence of evil is considered to be a necessary consequence of free will. So the existence of free will also explains to us why the world's resources are distributed unevenly. Jews who exercise free will to help to improve the balance of resources by giving to those less fortunate, for example, are helping to fulfil God's plan for creation. So moving on to lawgiver and judge. So Jews believe that God has given them many laws to follow. Okay, so in your head, think about what these are called and how many of them are there. And even one step further, can you think about what the first 10 are called? So mitzvot, 613 laws. Okay, they form the basis of the halakha. The halakha, remember, is the accepted code of conduct for Jewish life. The first 10 are the Ten Commandments, of course, the 10 laws that God gave to Moses after he rescued the Jewish slaves from Egypt. They're particularly important and form the foundation for all the other mitzvot. Jews believe that God judges them for how well they follow these laws based on their actions, behaviour and beliefs. God's judgments are considered to be fair and tempered by his loving, merciful nature. For Jews, there are two main times when God judges people. So think in your head when these are. 1. During the festival of Rosh Hashanah. So that's the Jewish New Year. And we can move on to that more when we look at practices next week. This is when God judges people for their actions over the past year and decides what the coming year will bring them. Many Jews also believe they'll be judged after death. So when God determines how they will spend the afterlife. Okay, so moving on to Shekinah, the divine presence. So the Shekinah, the presence of God on earth. Now, you need to be able to connect this to early Judaism and the tabernacle. So the tabernacle is considered to house the divine presence of God. It was a portable temple, similar in structure to a tent, that the Jews carried with them, carrying God around with them. However, you need to also remember that after Canaan was conquered, the tabernacle was replaced with Solomon's temple. And this temple was the centre of Jewish worship at the time. And several of the prophets experienced the presence of God in the temple. Okay, so the Tanakh describes how the Jews were led at times by a pillar of fire or a cloud on their journey to Canaan. These were completed by considered to be appearances from God that demonstrated his power and glory. So moving on to life after death 9.4. Now, unlike Catholic Christianity, there's little agreement about Jews about the afterlife because, you know, the Jewish holy books do not contain much information about the afterlife, so beliefs about it have developed gradually over the centuries. So one reason for the lack of agreement is that, in general, Jews are not too considered with the afterlife. They think it is more important to focus on the here and now, the present, and to live in a way that is pleasing to God. However, many Jews do believe that if you follow your faith correctly, you will go to heaven or paradise, Gan Eden, when they die. Okay, just like we do as Catholic Christians. There's no clear teaching about what heaven is like. It's considered to be where people are with God, but it is not known if this is a state of consciousness or a physical or spiritual place. Some Jews, though, believe that people who do not enter heaven go to Sheol. That is a place of waiting where souls are cleansed. Jews do not believe in a place of eternal punishment. Judgment and resurrection. So we've just had that. Obviously, we know that we're judged two times when we die and Rosh Hashanah. But also, Jewish people believe that God will judge everyone on the day of judgment after the coming of the Messiah. This is supported by Daniel 12:2. Many of those that sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to eternal life and others to reproaches, to everlasting aberrescence. Sorry, not aberrescence, that's a made-up word, abhorrence. So, 9.5, the nature and the role of the Messiah. Messiah, can you remember what that means? Anointed one. And messianic age, a time when the world is united in peace. So, origins. So, you need to know origins of the Messiah, nature of the Messiah, and obviously different views of the Messiah. Origins. Messiah was originally used in the Tanakh to refer to the kings of Israel. The first king of Israel was Saul, who lived around the 11th century. Before Saul was made king, the prophet Samuel anointed him with oil. Today, the word Messiah is used to refer to a future leader of the Jews, and this leader is expected to be a future king of Israel, a descendant of Saul's successor, King David. So, the nature of the Messiah. So the Messiah is expected to lead the Jews during the Messianic Age. This will be a time in the future of global peace and harmony when everyone will want to become close to God. Now, Orthodox Jews believe there is a descendant of King David in every generation who has the potential to become the Messiah. If the Jews are worthy of redemption, this person will be directed by God to become the Messiah. However, many Reformed Jews reject the idea of the Messiah. They do believe in a future Messianic age, but believe this will be achieved by everyone working together to create world peace rather than as a result of the leadership of one person. Okay, so in terms of the nature, obviously the nature of the Messiah, in terms of, remember that the Messiah will rule over humanity with kindness and justice, uphold the law in the Torah and be the ultimate teacher of it, bring in world peace and unite humanity together, rebuild the temple in Jerusalem and gather all the Jews back to Israel. Okay. Now, just as a bit of a side, was Jesus Messiah? Now, obviously, Christians believe that Jesus was the Messiah because through his death, resurrection, he saved humanity and established the kingdom of God on earth. Jews do not believe Jesus Messiah. The reason why I'm telling you this is in case you get a contrasting question. Okay, they don't believe he was Messiah because they believe that he did not fulfill the expectations that Jews have for the Messiah. He did not observe Torah law strictly enough or to establish the Messianic age. Okay, moving on to the Promised Land and the covenant with Abraham. So the promise, remember that first of first of all, the word covenant, because we're going to be looking at covenant of Abraham and Moses. Covenant, agreement with God. So the promised land is the land of Canaan, which God promised to Abraham and the Jews. Yeah. After Abraham had travelled to Canaan, he made a covenant with God. And God promised Abraham that he would be the father of many nations. And in return, Abraham was required to live a life dedicated to God. So Abraham in the promised land. Abraham travelled to Canaan after he was promised this land by God as a place where Abraham and his descendants could make a great nation. Okay, so if we just strip it right back to the timeline of events. Okay, this is really important. Abraham was born in the city of Ur. And at that time, people worshipped idols, statues of many different gods. From an early age, Abraham became convinced that there was only one God who had created everything, and that worshipping idols was wrong. Abraham tried to convince the people in Ur to stop worshipping idols, but had little success. Abraham and some of his family, including his wife Sarah, decided to leave Ur to travel to Canaan. Before they reached Canaan, they settled on the way at Haran in northern Mesopotamia. Many years later, God told Abraham to continue the journey to Canaan, promising to make a great nation through him. The Lord said to Abraham, "Go forth from your native land and from your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you." That's from Genesis 12. Once Abraham and Sarah reached Canaan, God told Abraham, "I give you all the land that you see and your offspring forever." So this became known as the Promised Land. Okay, the land of Canaan, which God promised to Abraham and his Jews. So that's sort of the timeline and that's the overview. But the covenant itself with Abraham, stick with this, it's really important. In Judaism, a covenant is agreement between God and an individual person, made on behalf of the rest of the Jews. Various covenants have been made during the history of Judaism, and Jews believe these covenants are still binding today. After Abraham travelled to Canaan, God made a covenant with him. So, what did God promise? To make Abraham the father of many nations. What was required of Abraham? To agree to walk in my God's ways and be blameless. That's from Genesis 17. How was the covenant sealed? Through the action of circumcision. So that's the removal of the foreskin from the penis. Ouch. Abraham proved his acceptance of the covenant by being circumcised himself and by circumcising all the males in his household. How did God keep his side of the covenant? To make Abraham the father of many nations, God made it possible for Abraham's wife Sarah to conceive despite the fact that she was very old. Sarah gave birth to a son called Isaac. And his birth is seen by some as a gift from God to mark the start of the covenant between Abraham and God. So moving on to 9.7, equally important, the covenant at Sinai, the Ten Commandments. Okay, so the covenant at Sinai is the covenant between God and Moses, who represented the Jewish people. This requires Jews to follow God's law in return for his protection and blessing. The Ten Commandments are 10 laws which were given to Moses by God after the Jews escaped from Egypt. The Ten Commandments were given to the Jews after they escaped. Okay, so in terms of, if you remember, about 4,000 years after God made the covenant with Abraham, the Jews were being forced to work as slaves in Egypt. So God chose Moses to lead their escape. He told Moses to ask the Egyptian Pharaoh to release the Jews from slavery so they could return to Canaan. After God had sent a number of plagues to Egypt, the Pharaoh finally agrees to release the Jews. So the Jews left Egypt, wandered for many years in the desert in the Sinai region between Egypt and Canaan. So when they arrived at Mount Sinai, Moses climbed the mountain, leaving the rest of the Jews at the base. And this is where God gave Moses the Ten Commandments. These were carved on two tablets of stone that Moses carried down the mountain. So the Ten Commandments, these form the foundation of Jewish law. They give Jews important guidance on how to have a good relationship with God, the first four commandments, and how to have a good relationship with each other to create a peaceful society, the last six commandments, which are recorded in Exodus. So, you shall have no other gods beside me, you shall not make for yourself a sculptured image, you shall not swear falsely by the name of the Lord, etc., etc. The Ten Commandments form the basis of the covenant at Sinai. This is a covenant between God and the Jews, which was agreed at Mount Sinai under the following terms. 1. God would protect the Jews from harm and be their God, and in return, Jews would have to obey his laws, including the Ten Commandments and the other laws in the Torah. This covenant is one of the main reasons why the Jews believe they are the chosen people of God. Okay, so moving on to key moral principles in Judaism. So justice, healing the world, and kindness to others. Justice refers to bringing about what is right and fair according to the law. Okay, pursuing justice is a sacred duty for Jews. For example, in the Torah, the prophet Micah states that God requires people to do justice and to love goodness. The laws in the Torah give guidance to Jews on how to treat the poor and vulnerable. Jews believe the Torah and the prophets were sent by God to help people understand how to bring about justice in a way that demonstrates mercy. Now, this is a really good one. If you get a question on this, you can be thinking about what you know about justice from the kingdom of God and peace and conflict and apply it into this Jewish context. Now, healing the world, what does that mean? Well, this is an important concept which involves taking actions to help God's work in sustaining the world. Many Jews help to heal the world by contributing to social justice or helping to protect the environment. For example, they might volunteer for a charity such as World Jewish Relief, which helps those living in poverty. Some Jews believe healing the world involves more than just charity work or similar actions. They believe it should also be by obeying the mitzvot and trying to become close to God. Lastly, some may consider to be the most important, and that is kindness to others. So Jews aim to show kindness to others by showing positive, caring actions towards all living things. Many of the laws in the Torah give guidance to Jews on how to be kind to others. So remember that the Torah teaches that Jews should love others as they love themselves. So a good source of authority for this is Leviticus 19. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against your countrymen. Love your fellow as yourself. 9.9, sanctity of life. Okay, we know what that means. Catholic Christianity crossover. Life is sacred, holy, and has been created by God. So Jews believe in sanctity of life very much because it stems from the creation story in Genesis. So Genesis 2, telling how God breathed life into Adam and the whole of creation. Life is therefore valuable and sacred because it was given to God. God gave life to humans and only God has the right to take it away. And Jews have a duty to preserve life. So remember, saving a life, be count nefesh. A belief in the sanctity of life is behind this concept because it is the obligation, because of what I've just said, that Jews have to save a person's life if they can, even if it means breaking Jewish laws. Okay, so an example of a law that might be broken to save a life: Jews are required to observe Shabbat, which means they're not allowed to do certain types of work. Free will and mitzvah. Lastly, so free will. Going right back to the beginning when we were looking at the nature of God. So Jews believe, we know that God has given them free will to make their own choices. But this does not mean people can do what they like without any consequences. So good actions lead to a life of fulfillment, bringing Jews closer to God. Bad actions will not bring people closer to God in life or after death. And we know in Genesis 3, Adam and Eve used their free will to disobey God and eat from the tree. Mitzvah, again, linking back to earlier on, we know it's a Jewish rule and commandment. We know we've got 613. But if you do get a question on mitzvah, remember that they are in two categories. One, mitzvah between man and God. Two, mitzvah between man and man. Okay? And there we have it. So, well done, year 11. As I say, if there's anything else you need, please don't hesitate to send me a little note on Show My Homework or email me, and I'd be more than happy to help.